Welcome back to Room 223. I'm your host, Norval Crandall, and today I'm going to discuss a topic near and dear to my heart, agribusiness. When you sit down and eat a juicy steak or a perfect pork chop, or you dig into those mashed potatoes or spring salad, do you ever wonder where it came from? I'm not talking about the local grocery store. I'm talking about where that food started. I grew up on a farm. I raised my five sons on a farm. We grew our own vegetables, canned our own food, and butchered our animals for meat for our table. I know, I already hear some of you moaning about this, but it's a fact of life. If you eat meat, you butcher animals. Some of you may live on a farm and totally realize this, and others of you might be hunters and completely understand what I'm talking about. But some of you may never have thought about where your food actually comes from. I still remember my first butchering experience. Our two cows got out, stepped over the fence in a 3-foot-high snowstorm, went frolicking in the road, and got hit by a car. Thankfully, my neighbor knew what to do and who to call, because at 13 and a former city girl, I had absolutely no idea. For the next couple of years, we had a lot of beef on our table. And let me tell you, it was pretty good. That was my first experience, but far from my last. While growing up, we raised and butchered our own lambs, hogs, veal calves, goats, turkeys, and chickens. The worst were the turkeys and chickens, but I digress. The point is, not everyone is aware or conscious of this. My first teaching job was in a suburb. Those kids thought meat came from the grocery store. They gave little thought to the fact that a farmer raised the animals from birth, a butcher killed them and cut them all up before they were wrapped and ready for sale at the store. They also didn't realize that all those canned and frozen vegetables came from large farms and went to a plant to be cleaned and packaged for human consumption. This is what I want to talk about. What is happening with the farm to processing plants to stores during this pandemic? The agricultural supply chain is suffering. The farms that supply our food are no longer small and family owned. They're big business. According to the USDA Farm Report in 2018, there were 2,029,200 farms in the U.S., a decrease from 2017 of 12,800 farms. Farmland was 899,500 acres, a decrease of only 870 acres, and the average farm size across the United States was 443 acres, which has been a pretty steady average for the last 10 years. Average farm sizes range from 69 acres in Connecticut and Massachusetts to 2,437 acres in Wyoming. Texas has the most farms with 247,000, and Alaska has the fewest, numbering only 1,000. And all of the output of America's farms contributes 1% to our GDP. Overall, the agriculture, food, and related industries provide 11% of American jobs, yet farming only contributes 1.3% of jobs in the agricultural sector in our economy. The jobs are in agriculture manufacturing, and that contributes 1%. These include post-harvest inputs of research and development, processing, marketing and transportation, and distribution. In thousands of food and beverage manufacturing plants located throughout the country, these employees were engaged in transforming raw agricultural materials into products for intermediate or final consumption. Meat and poultry plants employed the largest percentage of food and beverage factory workers, accounting for 29.3% in 2018. In other words, the meat and poultry industry broadly is responsible for 5.4 million jobs and $257 billion in wages. An estimated 527,019 people have jobs in production and packaging, importing operations, sales, packaging, and direct distribution of meat and poultry products. The dairy industry employed 8.8%, and fruit and vegetable workers accounted for 9.4% of those employed in this sector. Not only does the agricultural sector employ 11% of the population and supply over 1% of the GDP, it's one of the lowest paying sectors. Well, the Federal Minimum Wage Act sets the wage at $7.25 as of August 2009. Many field workers are not earning that minimum. According to the National Farm Worker Ministry, farm workers have the lowest annual family incomes of any U.S. wage and salary workers. In 2009, workers put in an average of 42 hours per week and had an average income between $10,000 and $12,499 as an individual, and between $15,000 and $17,499 for a family. To put this in perspective, current federal poverty guidelines for the U.S. for an individual is $12,490, and for a family of four, it is $25,750. This is based on straight hourly wage, but many field workers are paid on a piece rate basis and often only earn $6.80 or less an hour for an eight-hour-a-day job. 30% of the workers live under the poverty level. Cesar Chavez, a civil rights activist for farm workers, statement from the 1960s still holds true. Farm workers are involved in the planting and cultivation and harvesting of the greatest abundance of food known in this society. They bring in so much food to feed you and me and the whole country, and enough food to export to other places. The ironic thing and the tragic thing is that after they make this tremendous contribution, they don't have enough money or enough food for themselves. What happens after the produce and livestock leave the farm? It needs to go somewhere to be processed for human consumption. Enter processing plants. In the U.S. food and beverage processing arena, there are over 30,000 establishments owned by about 25,800 companies. Of that, 18% are meat processing, 5% processed grains, 9.5% processed fruits and vegetables, 9.6% are dairy, and 17% are beverages. The other processing and plants include animal food, sugar, confectionery, seafood, and bakery and tortilla products. Not surprisingly, the most plants are located in California, followed by New York, Texas, Pennsylvania, Illinois, Washington, and Florida. And FYI, Ohio ranks number 9. So how much do these plants process to feed 326 million Americans? In 2017, they processed 9 billion chickens, 32.2 million cattle and calves, 241.7 million turkeys, 2.2 million sheep and lambs, and 121 million hogs. This equates to 42.2 billion pounds of chicken, 26.3 billion pounds of beef, 80.2 million pounds of veal, 5.9 billion pounds of turkey, 150.2 million pounds of lamb and mutton, and 26.6 billion pounds of pork. You know, that's an awful lot of meat. Keep in mind, in 2016, on average, American men ate 4.8 ounces of meat per day, while women only ate 3.13 ounces per day. And overall, Americans spend less than any other developed nation in the world on food. The 2018 Food and Health Survey found, on average, Americans consume less fruits and vegetables and more protein than they think that the experts think they should. The top two reasons for this: the cost of and the lack of access to good quality fruits and vegetables. In 2015, according to the World Economic Forum and the North American Meat Institute, Austria led the world, spending 9.9% of income on food. Canada checked in at 9.1% and America at 6.4%. They only spent 6.4% of their disposable income on food. Levi Morrow, local agricultural education teacher, points out the impact of these large processing plants on the cost of food. The results of having these mega processors like Dean Food and Land O'Lakes is that we as Americans spend less disposable income on food than any other country. Thus, we've built the supply chain this way that gives us the cheapest food in the world. On a related note, here is some information about these mega processors. Dean Foods is an American food and beverage company and the largest dairy company in the United States. Land O'Lakes Incorporated is a member-owned agricultural cooperative based in Minnesota, focusing on the dairy industry. Tyson Foods Incorporated is an American multinational corporation based in Arkansas that operates in the food industry. Tyson Foods is the world's second largest processor and marketer of chicken, beef, and pork after JBS SA, and annually exports the largest percentage of beef out of the United States. The largest mega processor is JBS USA Holdings Incorporated. It's an American food processing company and wholly owned subsidiary of JBS SA, in other words, JBS South America, a Brazilian company that is the world's largest processor of fresh beef and pork, with more than $50 billion of U.S. money in annual sales as of 2017. So there's a little bit about a few of the mega processors. Here's another interesting point. The top slaughter states. Cattle cover the most with 8 states, including California, Nebraska, Texas, Wisconsin, and Pennsylvania. Hogs are in 7 states, including Iowa, Illinois, Indiana, and Pennsylvania. Chickens are in 3 states, primarily Arkansas, Alabama, and Georgia. And I'm really kind of surprised Pennsylvania is not on this list because they've got a lot of processing plants in Pennsylvania. And finally, turkeys are primarily slaughtered in 3 states, including Minnesota, North Carolina, and Arkansas. Add to the meat processing, the U.S. fruit and vegetable processing industry, which includes 1,900 establishments with a combined revenue of $72 billion. This includes companies such as Dole Food, Kraft Heinz, J.M. Smucker, J.R. Simplot, ConAgra Brands, The Kroger Company, and Seneca Foods. According to Mordar Intelligence, North America dominated the fruit and vegetable processing market in 2015. There is a high consumption of frozen fruits and vegetables in the United States and Canada. However, due to the increasing health awareness, consumers are expected to shift toward fresh produce in the long run. Demand for processed fruits and vegetables has grown strongly in the developing countries of Asia-Pacific over the last 5 years, which counteracts that shift. Many vegetable and fruit farmers don't have the manpower right now to harvest on time. Some of this is due to the illness, and some is because their workers can't cross the border from Mexico. Many large farms use migrant workers, and closing the border effectively stopped the stream of migrant workers available. Across the board, the agriculture industry is concerned about logistic issues, whether it's moving raw materials across closed borders or having enough healthy employees to keep facilities operational and products moving. Let's take a look at the dairy processing in the U.S. According to IUF Dairy Industry Research, the U.S. dairy industry is sixth largest in the world in terms of milk production and represents more than 10% of total milk production in the world as of 2010. The dairy industry in the U.S. has undergone significant structural change over the past 8 years, with the number of large operations increasing and total milk cow operations declining significantly. Production is migrating to Midwestern states, including Wisconsin, Michigan, and Ohio, showing the largest increases. In 2010, the U.S. produced 193 billion pounds of milk from 53,127 dairy herds, averaging 172 animals per herd. You can do the math on that one. In 2019, there were approximately 37,468 dairy herds, producing 218,322 pounds of milk. 218,322 million pounds of milk. Unfortunately, for most, it is a losing battle as the average cost of production exceeds the average price paid for raw milk, and many dairy farmers are leaving the industry. In 2018, 238,442 million pounds of milk were supplied. Of that, 929 million pounds was fed to calves. 10,383 million pounds were exported, and 196,040 million pounds was used for human consumption. This included approximately 1,860 million pounds of butter, 10,891 million pounds of cheese, 4,416 million pounds of yogurt, 6,997 million pounds of frozen products, you know, that good ice cream, and 54,985 million pounds of fluid milk. According to Dairy Foods, in 2018, the top 100 companies contributing to the processing of dairy included Nestle North America, with more than 10 processing plants, making favorites like Haagen-Dazs, Nesquik, and Coffee Mate; Dean's Foods Company, with 65 plants, supplying Nature's Pride, Nutty Buddy, and True Moo; Dan One North America, with 14 plants, giving us Activia, Danimals, and Dannon Yogurt; Kraft Heinz Company, with 11 plants, producing Breakstone, Kraft Cheeses, and Velveeta; Schreiber Foods, with 29 plants; Dairy Farmers of America, with 42 plants, supplying us with Borden and Dairy Made products; Land O'Lakes, with 8 plants, giving us Land O'Lakes butter and Alpine Lace cheese; and the Kroger Company, with 20 plants for their Kroger, Private Selection, Simple Truth, and Turkey Hill brands. When you take all of this in, that's a lot of food and a lot of products, meat, fruit, vegetables, and dairy processed into something that we can eat, drink, and make merry with. So how many people do the world farmers feed? The current world population is 7.8 billion people, and of that, 329 million are in the United States. The UN estimates the world will have an additional 2 billion people by mid-century. Assuming a nutritionally adequate diet, this will require roughly a 28% increase in our food supply. Much of this growth will have to come from increased yields, We already saw that the number of farms are actually decreasing. If a higher yield can't be achieved, we may need to change our eating habits. Less meat, reducing food waste, and eating less rich foods. So to close the gap, we're going to need to adopt a variety of innovative strategies. We needed to adopt a variety of innovative strategies before our current situation. With the current state of our world, though, we're going to have to do something fast. Right now, while our food supply is still intact, it is taking a hit from the fallout from the coronavirus. In meatpacking plants from South Dakota to Tennessee, workers have gotten sick from the coronavirus as they work side by side, cutting, boning, and trimming meat. The spread has shuttered plants, slowed production, and created a ripple effect across the supply chain. Tyson Foods feels that the supply chain is breaking. Cargill CEO Dave McClellan sees it a little less drastic and feels that the food chain is under extreme stress and strain. But so are a lot of other industries undergoing challenges. And when I talked to my son, he agreed with Cargill. The supply chain is under stress, but it's not broken yet. And let's look at why people in agriculture feel this way. What we see in the news tends to be the extremes, the last resorts. When the pandemic hit, no one foresaw this ripple effect. Let's look at an example. The poultry industry works about 9 weeks out. That is to say, after chicks spend 3 weeks in a hatchery, and then the time needed to raise them to market rate, it's over 9 weeks for egg to slaughter. If a plant processes 1 million birds a week, that means farmers need to have 1 million market weight birds each week to sell to the packer. That means they have over 9 million chickens at various stages of growth, not to mention the layers needed to produce the eggs to hatch. Most poultry houses hold 25 to 35,000 birds, which equates to about 40 houses a week to go to slaughter. And those 40 houses are owned by 10 to 15 different growers. When everything's working like clockwork, no problem. But things aren't working correctly. People are getting sick at the processing plants, and the plants are installing added protection for workers, effectively slowing production lines. The company can't process a million birds. It can only process half of that, so it reduces the number of animals it buys. This adds to the processing cost because oftentimes the processor has already assumed a portion of the cost of raising the birds and now bears the extra cost of keeping the live birds. Then what are the farmers supposed to do with the unsold animals? They can't continue to grow them because the meat will be no good. They will have increased feed bills they can't pay. And their barn space will reduce as each animal takes up more room. In April, a grower with facilities in Maryland and Delaware euthanized nearly 2 million chickens because of the low demand and the problems in the processing plant. But poultry farmers aren't the only ones. U.S. pork producers are facing a stark reality. Although demand for their product is high in the nation's grocery stores, they may have to euthanize and dispose of millions of pigs due to a breakdown in the American food supply chain. Cattle farmers are facing a similar paradox situation, as are milk and egg producers, because of the tight time frame between when it's born and when it's ready to slaughter. Some of the most drastic actions are occurring on hog farms first. According to the Minnesota Pork Producers Association, an estimated 10,000 pigs are being euthanized every day in that state. Once pigs reach 350 to 400 pounds, they're too large for the slaughterhouse equipment. And continuing to feed hogs that will never be sold is a drain on the farmer's bottom line. And new piglets are being born in sow houses every day. farmers simply have no place to put them. And some of the pig farmers are aborting piglets so that they can keep the sow houses under control. And it's just a vicious cycle. And that's only one piece. In recent weeks, 115 meat and poultry plants have reported COVID-19 infections in the U.S. And about 5,000 workers, 1% of the industry's workforce, have been confirmed sick, with at least 45 deaths, according to the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. One of the reasons that plants shut down and why it's particularly disruptive to the meat industry is they're typically very large to the labor-intensive method of processing meat, such as picking out bones by hand. With 3,700 employees, the Smithfield plant in Sioux Falls usually represents 4 to 5% of U.S. pork production, or about 18 million servings a day, closed down. Most of the processing plants across the U.S. have closed because of being hot spots for the coronavirus. In the beginning, animals and products were sent to other plants for processing, but that soon became unmanageable. U.S. beef and pork production capacity shrank 40% in April, said Will Sawyer, lead economist at the agricultural lender CoBank. U.S. consumers, Sawyer predicts, could see 30% less meat in stores by Memorial Day at prices 20% higher than last year. And what's happening is pork farmers are aborting piglets and buying time with growing out underweight hogs. Supplies of raw milk, which is processed into drinkable dairy milk, greatly exceed retail demand due in large part to the collapse of sit-down dining at restaurants and the closure of schools. Now dairy farmers are dumping excess milk that they can't sell to processors. Food and vegetable growers are letting produce rot on the vine or simply plowing it under. Last week, President Trump signed an executive order labeling meat plants as critical infrastructure, effectively preventing state and local health agencies from closing them down regardless of illness and death. Now it's up to the meat packing companies to adapt to the coronavirus while sustaining production and worker health. On April 28th, Cargill's chairman and CEO said, "It remains to be seen how we're going to manage that dynamic between the health and emotional safety and the physical safety of workers in the plants." Jason Walsh, director of the Blue Green Alliance, a trade group that champions environmental and labor union issues, had this to say: "Workers in the American food industry are vital to us all. But the terrible working conditions that already existed in that industry have only been exacerbated by COVID-19. He goes on to say, Trump is using the DPA to try to force workers back on the job in unsafe conditions. It doesn't get more wrong than that. Have you ever read The Jungle by Upton Sinclair? A book written to bring attention to the plight of immigrant laborers, but instead led to the passage of the Pure Food and Drug Act and the Meat Inspection Act. Or how about The Grapes of Wrath by John Steinbeck? His book evokes sympathy for the struggles of migrant farm workers. Both of these bring to light the terrible working conditions often found in the food supply chain. So if you haven't read them, add them to your reading list. They're well worth the read. Major agribusinesses based in the United States with global operations said they have increased hygiene and sanitation procedures and are taking steps to ensure their facilities continue to operate. Some food companies, such as ConAgra Brands, which makes Duncan Hines desserts, Slim Jim jerky, and Hunt's ketchup, are temporarily reducing varieties to focus on items that are in high demand. Another issue facing processing plants during this stay-at-home closed economy is the plants converting from packaging sold to restaurants or schools to retail packaging. While food companies are taking steps to bolster production wherever possible, industry experts said it requires time and investment for food manufacturers to reconfigure their plants to make food for retail consumption instead of restaurant or commercial use. It's very difficult to take those products that are packaged in ways that are good for restaurants, colleges, and hospitals and now put them into retail packaging, says Hughes's partner at JPG Resources. Flour millers globally saw a rapid increase in demand as quarantine and shelter-in-place orders worldwide panicked consumers who started stockpiling flour and other grain-based foods. Millers around the world said they are operating overtime to produce enough flour, but are worried about how border closings and quarantine measures could impact the supply of the raw materials. The cumulative impact of these closures is going to stress the supply chain and create supply challenges if capacity is not brought back online in a timely manner. So, what is happening? Consumers are having to choose from fewer options or make substitutions. Processing plants are adding safety measures for employees and finding new and more efficient methods to process and package food to meet the changing consumer needs. Some farmers are changing how they sell. There's a pork farmer selling his stock privately to buyers. A dairy farm is canning its own milk and selling it. There's a produce farmer in California who let the public come in and pick the fields before he plowed them under. These solutions are being used in many areas, and the public consumer is taking advantage of the offerings. Some farmers have lines of cars waiting to purchase farm fresh products like eggs and milk. But how many of us can really turn to our neighbors for all our food needs? Fortunately, I live in an area where I have that ability, but there are millions who do not, and they are anxious about the food supply chain. Many people are not growing flower gardens this year, but are putting in vegetable gardens. So is there going to be a renewal in homesteading and surviving skills? Will Gen Xers and millennials be calling on older family members to teach them how to can and home process food? Only time will tell, but I, for one, am up for the challenge. Looking at the positives, we're eating healthier foods. According to a news brief published in the Harvard Health Publishing, a study conducted over the past 20 years shows that American men and women improved on a 100-point healthy eating index thanks to higher intakes of high-quality carbohydrates, such as whole grains, plant protein, such as nuts, and unsaturated fats, and lower intakes of added sugars. The not-so-good news, 42% of the American diet is still coming from low-quality carbs, and about 12% is coming from saturated fat. Like turning a massive battleship, it takes time to change eating patterns. These findings confirm that a winning strategy includes swapping low-quality carbs for higher-quality ones, replacing saturated fats, like those in red meats, with unsaturated fats, like those in nuts, and reducing calories from carbs overall, you know, fewer snacks and drinks with added sugar. This pandemic just might help turn that battleship. Processing plants and farmers are taking more precautions and producing better food. Animals are living in better conditions, increasing the health and efficiency for the farmer. Families are coming together again, baking more from scratch. You know, remember that run on flour? Growing and canning their own foods, purchasing locally grown foods, and reopening lines of communication between generations. Overall, there might be a silver lining to the pandemic. I want to thank Levi Morrow for contributing to this podcast. And I also can't thank my son Skip enough for proofing this and sharing his ideas, views, and wealth of knowledge about the poultry industry with his mother. I also want to apologize if it seems a little choppy because between the bird squawking and the dog barking and me having a sneezing attack, I had to break this into multiple pieces. With that being said, have a great week. Stay safe, healthy, and happy, and good luck in all of your endeavors, providing they're legal and moral. It's